League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Guess who's coming in the studio soon? We will have Liberty Kitchen in. Just had a great lunch with Carl Eves and Carla over at Liberty Kitchen in the Heights. Always gumbo. Always do some gumbo, no matter what entree I get. But we'll have Lance Feig and Carl in studio. They'll be coming in regularly with food and all as one of our great sponsors again of the show. So our thanks to Liberty Kitchen. Got that Heights location, and you've got the Treehouse. You've also got the wonderful location in Garden Oaks as well, the beer garden over there. Again, a quick word here for the Kings Court. Real Soccer Pub in Edo. It's the Kings Court right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins. They've got 13 TVs there, giant big screen at the Kings Court. They show the Premier League, La Liga, Champions League, Bundesliga, the Dynamo. By the way, Cindy Bourbano, Eddie Robinson are going to join us next Wednesday over at the Gorgeous Gale. So the Stars are going to be out. Have the entire Dynamo television crew there. That is, of course, if I make it to host my own show at the Gorgeous Gale. And if I don't, somebody will fill in. No, I'm going to be there. It's going to be a great night. I'm going to go over there early. Hope to see Roger and Matt and some of the guys from the Liverpool supporters group. Hoping to see, doesn't matter, whatever team, whatever it is when it comes to the sport of soccer, you're welcome. We're not discriminating anybody. We want people from the college game there. Going to invite some of the college coaches as well. By the way, our good friend Tom Clare, who is putting up the fight of his life with cancer and is continuing to do the, our Kick Cancer Charity dinner. He's still working on that, believe it or not, this man. And he is something special. We need to get him on soon because we need to talk to him and his wife, Cheryl, about the 60-year anniversary of the Busby Babes plane crash. And how that's affected people and how they've kept those players' memories alive. It's really touching. They had a whole bunch of things over in Munich, Germany, because that's where the plane had crashed. So hoping to get Tom Clare on. Dynamo 1-0 over Phoenix, the goal from Arturo Alvarez. I think it's that time. Jose, can you give me the intro music, please?
Game on, man.
Here's Glenn Davis.
Game on.
With Game On for 90.
Presented by Bud Light. Game on.
All right, there's a lot of talk about player development in the United States on the heels of the lack of qualification to this summer's World Cup in Russia. Coaches, pathways to identification, pay to play, minority communities being overlooked. They're all very hot topics right now. And many people are very measured and understand that there is improvement that needs to be made in all these areas. There's also accountability in all these areas. I was told a story recently that I have to share, and this isn't the most positive thing, but I see this as something that is very detrimental in the youth community. Not going to name names, but as a former youth director, I feel the need to pass this story on because we simply have some, and remember, I'm saying some, snake oil salesmen in our youth soccer community. Yes, I said it. Snake oil salesmen in our youth community, and you know who you are. A very good coach I know who's working with youth here in Houston, making great strides with his team, connecting kids, setting the tone. Players are learning. He's mentoring them, developing them, moving them forward. Said coach is called to a meeting by his club directors. So it means he's going to miss a youth tournament with his team. Club asked him to not go to the youth tournament, but go to a meeting. Now, this said coach has some ego-driven parents, one in particular that has created problems, likely a very divisive force, a parent not content to trust the trainer. When away at the meeting, the team wins this tournament with the parent manager, who then goes to the club directors and asks for the trainer to be removed. Not only that he is removed, but he then says if he's not removed, he's going to take the team, because he's politicked behind the scenes with parents, to another club. Now, this is a pivotal club moment, and it's a sad one. What do you think the club does? Yeah, you know, the club, you're correct. They cave to the parent, they remove the trainer, and satisfy the parent team manager. So instead of backing their staff, they back the parent. You know why? Because they're running numbers, and there's a fear of losing 16 players and a couple thousand a year player fees, and around $40,000 to $50,000. And this is a regular occurrence in the run-the-numbers type soccer club that in many cases is run by people with deep soccer backgrounds who have lost their moral compass, quite frankly. I know these clubs. I know some of these guys. They're some of my peers. It's sad. And it does bother me. These types of moments done in front of youth are player development killers. This is a problem. So I simply ask, if you're a youth director, how are you running your youth club? How is your youth club being run, and how, as a parent, do you want it run? Every single one of us has a responsibility. Choose your club wisely, because there are a lot of things that can improve, and one of them is taking the time to deal with youth players properly and sending the right tone and not caving when you are trying to create a club identity. And guess what? Some of the clubs have an identity of just numbers runners and taking the cash. And that is Game On for 90. All right. Now, what I want to make sure, if that bothers you out there, then maybe that struck a nerve. And there are tremendous coaches out there, and there are ones that are spending the time to work with players. And they're not rushing when it comes to talking to players, communicating with them, providing the good balance of tough love and also a praise, because you need both. And by the way, disappointment, I've mentioned this on this show. Disappointment is a part of player development. It's a part of human development. It's a part of player development. 100%. You can't grow without some disappointment. You can't grow when you win everything. You can't grow when you're told how good you are consistently. It's not realistic. I'd love somebody to call me and tell me I did something good. It's a joke. But that is not a joke, what I just said on Game On for 90. All right, so rest of the show. We've got DeMarcus Beasley coming up. We've got coming up next, he is the one and only Dr. Joe Maknik. He is the rules referee on Fox. He's been doing that for a number of years. He was put into that position by Michael Cohen. It was his idea, I believe. He'll be on the World Cup as well. Again, a reminder, next Wednesday, it is a live show. The Gorgeous Gale, thegorgeousgale.com. My good friend Peter over there in West University. Guess what? We're going live next week. Lots of guests, lots of celebrities over at the Gorgeous Gale next Wednesday live, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And yes, Jose, you are listening. Dr. Joe Maknik goes into the Hall of Fame, and we got the script, Living in the Hall of Fame. This song has a special meaning to me.
ESPN.
97.5. This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Now, don't forget, the real soccer pub down in Edo, it's the King's Court. It's right next to BBVA Compass Stadium at 903 Hutchins. They've got 13 TVs in there, a giant big screen at King's Court. They show the Premier League, La Liga, Champions League, Bundesliga, Major League Soccer, and the Houston Dynamo, and much, much more. King's Court has 24 taps, a full bar, extensive selection of spirits, great pub food. I recommend the butter chicken or the curry there because they do have Indian entrees. It is a great place to go. Get over to King's Court. Say hello to Jay. It's KingsCourtTX.com, the perfect intro to a man that, well, he doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to give you one anyway. He's Dr. Joe Maknik. You know him now as the Fox Sports refereeing expert, but if you dig deeper into his career and involvement in the game of the United States, it is pretty remarkable. College coach, began the model of goalkeeping camps, commissioner of the AISA, which I think I briefly played in for a year, head of the MISL and MLS refereeing programs. He was a goalkeeper coach at the 90 World Cup with the U.S. And, of course, he is an expert on the video assistant. And we're going to bring him on now because Dr. Joe Maknik just inducted into the Hall of Fame with Brianna Scurry, with Tony DiCicco. And what a great class that was. It might have been overshadowed a little bit by the presidential election, but Dr. Joe Maknik joins us now. Dr. Joe, thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Glenn.
Well, I kind of want to take you back to, you know, your love affair with the sport and how it started, because I've read it, but I would love my listeners to know how you got involved in the game on the East Coast.
It was a crazy thing because I grew up in New York City and there was not, you know, any really grassroots soccer way back in the late 50s. My career in soccer spanned 60 years, actually. And I was a big hockey fan and went to pretty much every Ranger game in Madison, in the old Madison Square Garden. And the Boston Bruins used to come in. There was only a six-team league. They had a line they called the Yuki line, Busick, Stasiak, Horvath. And one day I sat down in my English class and in school and sat down to a person of Ukrainian heritage. We started talking hockey. He said, do you know anything about soccer? I said, no. And he said, well, good, we need a goalkeeper. You could be the goalkeeper. And that's how it all started.
Pretty remarkable. Now, you know, you've done it all. You've been a college coach at LIU, New Haven, very good programs on the East Coast. You began the model of a goalkeeping camp. You've been a commissioner of a league. You've worn so many hats. Tell me a little bit about the movement and all these opportunities. Were you looking for different challenges? Was this based out of need? Because as we all know, it's not easy to make a living at soccer, especially back in those days.
Well, I guess it's a matter of timing, Glenn. You know, the game was rapidly making progress and developing on all levels. And I don't know. I mean, I had a little expertise in playing goal and was an honorable All-American in 1962 at LIU and refereed a little bit as the intramural director there. And because I knew hockey when the indoor league started, they needed a referee who could, you know, also knew, you know, the hockey rules of time penalties and substitutions on the fly and things like that. So I was recommended by Walter Chisowitz, one of my mentors, to become the referee-in-chief of the Major Indoor Soccer League. I refereed, I don't know, maybe 200 of those games and actually did the All-Star game in Madison Square Garden, which was a big thrill, obviously.
Yeah.
When the national team was qualifying for 1990 World Cup, they needed someone to work with the goalkeepers. Walter Chisowitz, again, was the technical advisor, director of coaching for U.S. Soccer, and he recommended me to Bob Gensler. We hit it off very well, and I'm proud to say that, you know, my contribution, everybody talks about Paul Caligiuri's magic goal against Trinidad to put us into 90 World Cup, but people seem to forget about Tony Miola's four straight shutouts in the last four qualifying games. If he would have given up a goal in any one of those games, we would not have qualified. And then, of course, there was always the great penalty kick save made by David Vanoli against Costa Rica in the early qualifying stages, and that too solidified a win. So without that save, we don't make the World Cup either. So I think I made a contribution there, and the rest is history, I guess.
I'm glad you were recognized because, you know, you are a pioneer. I know you went in as a builder, but you're a pioneer as well. And you did blaze paths, I believe, for others, whether it was with goalkeeping camps and refereeing, you name it. You were a part of it. So we fast forward now, and Michael Cohen, who we all know as a soccer producer in the United States, comes to you with the idea of you being the refereeing expert. And it's blossomed this other wonderful career because I think it's given people an opportunity to kind of learn your personality. I certainly learned it at those MLS TV meetings, and, you know, we'd be a little drowsy in the back, and then all of a sudden Dr. Joe would come in, and, you know, you jump up in your seat, and you're excited because you were very enthralling, and that's not bagging on anybody else. But now you're the Fox Sports refereeing expert, and I think you bring a valuable resource to these matches now in explaining things to the fan.
Thank you. I'm really enjoying that role. As you reminded me, I used to do the broadcast seminars back in the MLS when Michael Cohen was in charge of television back then. And when Fox started their new networks, FS1 and FS2, they wanted to have someone in the sport of soccer similar to Mike Pereira, who analyzes the referees and rules in the NFL. So Michael recommended me. I had a screen test and managed, I guess, to secure that job. I must be doing it 5-6 years now because I've done 3 Gold Cups, so it must be 6 years. But I'm really looking forward to the World Cup. I did the Women's World Cup in Vancouver, Canada, last time around. So, mm-hmm. But this will be the first Men's World Cup on Fox.
So let's talk about the video assistant and how you think it'll work with the World Cup on such a big platform.
A big decision will be made actually March 2nd by IFAB, the International Football Association board that actually makes up the rules for soccer, whether or not to use video assistant referee in the World Cup. All signs are that they will. I mean, the referees are being trained. They've actually gotten to have 3 big meetings before the World Cup, solely concentrating mostly on video assistant referee. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's been recognized that, you know, soccer is a very difficult game to officiate. It's fast, it's athletic, there's blind spots on the field. And, I mean, UEFA tried a unique thing 6 or 7 years ago when they put assistant, what they called them, additional assistant referees on the goal line. First their role was to serve as a goal judge, but even with their good positioning on the goal line, they couldn't tell 100% naked eye. It happens so fast when the ball bounces off the crossbar and out. So they've actually taken a role where they become the assistant to the referee inside the penalty area, making advising the referee whether it's a penalty kick or not a penalty kick. And that's been a very useful tool. But I think video assistant referee is the next step. It's been an experiment now, and for 2 years, it's been used in the Bundesliga, in Serie A, in MLS the second half of last season. There's had a lot of opportunities for success and failure, and a report will be given at this meeting in March to IFAB, and I think they're going to go forward with it for the World Cup.
Dr. Joe Maknik, just inducted into the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. We're talking about the video assistant referee. How do you think the introduction went with Major League Soccer?
You know, Major League Soccer, they brought in Howard Webb, one of the most experienced referees in the world, refereed at the highest levels of competition, World Cup, UEFA final, all of that. So they had great leadership, and they actually just submitted a report, and their stats are similar to the stats for the rest of the world. The actual incidences where you go to the video assistant referee or where the referee has to go to the monitor, it happens only really once every three or so games. Although every goal is checked and, you know, many things are checked, six or seven things are checked during the course of the game, it's only once every three games on average where the actual referee shows the sign of the TV and maybe he goes to the monitor or he takes the advice from the video assistant. I think MLS, actually, because the referees are used to working with each other in teams, and they've been together now in the organization called Pro. They're all familiar with each other. They meet every 2 weeks. I think they've been very successful with the video assistant referee in MLS. And obviously, that familiarity with each other, that didn't happen in the Confederations Cup last summer in Russia, which they had real difficulty with the video assistant referee, mostly because the referees were coming from all over the world, some from countries where they hadn't even been used to the system. So they had a lot of growing pains there. There's a big learning curve, but I hope they get it all figured out in time for the World Cup.
Is there a learning curve for the fan as well? I mean, I think to the fans sometimes it's pretty nebulous.
Well, that's one of the downsides, actually, and it's a good point, Glenn. We know, like, from watching NFL, when the referee goes to the camera and looks at the monitor, he'll come back on the screen and with his microphone, you know, will tell us based on what a decision is made, whether the catch has been made or if the ball didn't cross the line for a touchdown or whatever. So one of the shortfalls of the video assistant referee in soccer is the communication with the broadcast team and obviously with the spectators in the stands. And I hope that that's one of the things that they improve upon, because we all deserve to know upon what the referee has made a final decision.
Do you think sometimes the media is overly focused on refereeing decisions? Because sometimes I just see the media just so on top of singular refereeing decisions that a lot is missed from what are outstanding games. And I mean, it's even in games where it doesn't necessarily decide the outcome or it's controversial with the outcome.
Well, like I said earlier, Glenn, soccer, very difficult to referee primarily because it's so low scoring. So you get, your 0-0, your 1-0, your 2-1. Many times a game is won by one goal. So that means when a referee makes what they call a match-critical decision, that such as penalty kick or no, not a penalty kick, red card or yellow card, send off, not send off, offside, not offside. So those are match-critical decisions. And when one of them is made incorrectly, it definitely affects the outcome of the game because the game is so low scoring. So we can understand the media's, focus on that. But then there's the other element also that, a quality referee enhances the playing atmosphere. So if the players know they're being protected by the referee and that they're safe, and the referee is dealing properly with reckless challenges and careless fouls, then we're going to see a better game. So the referee, just plays such a major role in soccer, and because there's only one person with the whistle, the focus is on that person as opposed to every other sport where there are multiple whistles.
Dr. Joe, what behavior from the players would you want altered most? I have a feeling I might get what you're going to say, but I did want to ask you the question because I want you to say it.
Well, I'm sure that everyone on the listening audience knows the answer as well, and we would all like to see an end put to those instances where the referee makes a decision and then gets crowded by 6, 7, 8, 10 players, sometimes from both teams, trying to pressure him to either change that decision, which almost never happens, or maybe to influence a decision, whether it be a yellow or red, had he not originally first shown the card. So, the punishment in soccer, like in a send-off, I mean, we don't have time penalties. We don't have technical fouls. So the referee has only a choice of showing a yellow card And of course, a second yellow card in the match means you're out of the match. And if you're out of the match, whether it's for two yellows or for a straight red, your team is playing shorthanded, 10 against 11 or worse. And not only that, that player misses at least the next game. So the punishment for the crimes is very, very severe. And referees are hesitant to show that card for dissent or for what they call mass confrontation. They're hesitant to that, and they sometimes leave it up to the competition authority to later fine or suspend the players. And I think, you know, we've mentioned MLS. I think MLS does a good job with that as well, with the disciplinary committee.
Well, you know what? There's one thing that didn't need a video assistant referee. You know what that is?
Go ahead.
That was you getting elected into the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. There was no question there what was going on. Dr. Joe, you really deserve it. Congratulations. I'm sure your family is incredibly proud, but your contributions to the game, incredibly noteworthy, and we look forward to seeing you on your continued work with Fox Sports.
Thank you so much, Glenn. I hope you're with us again, too, at the World Cup.
It's going to be a good one. He's Dr. Joe Maknik, the Fox Sports refereeing expert. But you got to look at Google him. It's M-A-C-H-N-I-K. And I'm looking forward to working with Dr. Joe in the World Cup. But Google him, because the different areas of the game that he was involved in is absolutely incredible. A very, very interesting man, and we appreciate him being on tonight. By the way, he was elected in with Brianna Scurry, the U.S. women's goalkeeper. And he recently passed, the wonderful Tony DiCicco, who I got to call a number of games with over the years, and such a sad loss was Tony. Before we go to break, a quick word now. Carlsberg Team of the Week. Carlsberg, probably the best beer in the world. It's a wonderful Danish beer, and we all know Denmark's going to the World Cup. Jan Christensen of Danish Inspirations is happy about that, but we're going to give it to Wigan Athletic this week for the 1-0 win over Manchester City, knocking them out of the FA Cup. Carlsberg, probably the best beer in the world. And again, our thanks to Carlsberg and Clay Gavilion. We'll take a break. More to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Hey, Glenn Davis here for Liberty Kitchen. You know, Liberty Kitchen knows how to serve it up, whether it's lunch, brunch, or supper. Think of it as modern American comfort food. Some of the staples at Liberty Kitchen include deviled eggs topped with fried oysters, cowboy surfers, oysters on the half shell, grilled chops and steaks, ribs, and fish. Liberty Kitchen's signature cocktails, plus always cold beer on tap. Now you know why Liberty Kitchen is a regular stop. Liberty Kitchen, Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, and Treehouse, Memorial City.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, tonight we're going to wrap it up in big style. Before we do, a couple of words here. First, for the Gorgeous Gale, great Irish pub with an Irish feel. The Gorgeous Gale in West University. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gale. Say hello to Peter. It's 55-55 Morningside. So a week from today, we will be doing a live show with the Gorgeous Gale. Dynamo players will be there ahead of their game against Atlanta. We're hoping to have Houston Dash coach Vera Powell there. All kinds of people from the soccer community there. So it's next Wednesday. Get over there. We'll have giveaways. I'll be giving tickets away. It's going to be a big night over at the Gorgeous Gale as we celebrate the kickoff of the 2018 MLS season. TheGorgeousGale.com, 5555 Morningside Drive in West University. And next week, we will have a live show in there. So we want to see all you soccer fans out there. Eddie Robinson's going to join me, Cindy Bourbano, the Dynamo TV crew, all going to be there. Players will be there, as well as the Houston Dash. We'll have some of the college community there. So get out. Liverpool fans will be there. I know that, and I'm hoping to hear from you when you are out there. So it's next Wednesday, the Gorgeous Gale, live Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, with a lot of giveaways as well. Also, our thanks to DJ Sun and theflathouston.com. The Flat is in the Montrose area. It's the home of the best local, national, and international DJs. A great vibe over there. You combine that with the best frozen mojito in Houston, and you've got the perfect setup. Check out the Flat, flathouston.com, and my good friend, DJ Sun, and he's kind of our Dutch expert. Speaking of the Netherlands, well, this is a guy who played in the Netherlands. DeMarcus Beasley caught up with him yesterday as the Dynamo continue to prepare for 2018. Well, DeMarcus, let's start it off like this by just kind of getting your sense of where preseason began and kind of where you are when it comes to sort of the stages of preseason.
I mean, right now we're in the final stage. Obviously the first stage is we're lucky because we live in Houston, so the weather isn't too bad, so we can stay and train in Houston for a little while for the first stage preseason, and then we headed down to. RGV, our affiliate team down there. So it was good to see their facilities, which was pretty immaculate. Get a chance to meet some of the players and compete against them and help them with their preseason as well. So we were there for a week, and then obviously we came back to Houston, and now we're in our final stages down here and over here in. Where are we? Arizona and Tucson. It's a blur now, all this stuff coming together. Now we're in Tucson, so now we're in the final stage.
DeMarcus Beasley, always great to get a veteran perspective here from a guy that's been in World Cups and has played in Europe as well. What's Wilmer pushing now as you get a little bit closer? Because I'm assuming now that the next couple of practice games, things are ratcheted up a little bit and differing things for differing players. But what are some of the team concepts that are being introduced now by Wilmer at this stage?
Just getting our cohesiveness back. Obviously when you're off for a while and, you don't forget, obviously, I'm not talking about you don't forget how to play football, but, just as far as a team and how guys move and how they want the ball and where they want the ball and what kind of runs they like to make, just getting sharper. That's like the final stage. These games are good. We played Portland, we played New York, the second team, which they were still a pretty good team. We're getting good competition down here. And, now it's just about being getting sharper and getting ready for March 3rd because that's the ultimate goal. It's not, trying to, score 10 goals in these preseason games. It's being solid defensively, being solid offensively, and, making sure we're a good team, doing things together off the field to make sure we have that camaraderie right as well. So getting all the things, ready for March 3rd.
March 3rd, Atlanta will be at BBVA Cup of Stadium. Get your tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. That's going to be a great one there. Tata Martino and company coming here to Houston to kick it off. That's a great opening game against Atlanta United. I would think that's one that would get you excited, DeMarcus, with the type of players they have.
You get up for any game. It doesn't, for me, every game is exciting. Every game brings a new challenge, we all know Atlanta's a good team. They have a lot of good young, players, and they're hungry. They fell short as well. Getting to the final, as did we. So, both teams are gonna try to get off on the right foot, and that's all it's about. I mean, we're at home, so obviously we're gonna try to, push the pace and try to win the game. To be honest, so that's what it's all about. But yeah, I mean, every game is it brings a new challenge. So. Our first challenge out of the 34 is Atlanta.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Just the dynamic nature of that team, a very out-and-out attacking team. I just think that's a really exciting opening game. I mean, it beats having the Colorado Rapids here. I mean, I guess that's what I was trying to say, with no disrespect to the Colorado Rapids. But I think Atlanta's the more interesting opening game. How about you? All these years, fending off the competition to be a starter. This competitive urge that you still have. I find it remarkable. I find you as a remarkable athlete. Obviously, you're a legendary player for the U.S. But when it comes to competing and fending off all the challengers, which is what you have to do within the context of the team, how do you do it?
Belief. I believe in myself. I believe in my ability. Like I said, I know I'm not, 20 years old anymore, but, I still – put in the work to try to make myself successful. on the field, and you know, things that I do to make sure my body's right to, you know, keep competing with the, you know, 20 and 25 year olds to, you know, to keep my spot. You know, I mean, you know, this is not my first rodeo, you know, so I know that there's, you know, other teammates in my position, and you know, it's a good battle to have, I guess you kind of say, you know, between the left back position, and I'm always up for the challenge, you know, and they are as well, you know, so it's just what it is. It's about competing, and you know, we try to make each other better every day, you know, because at the end of the day, we're all here for one goal. It's not about, yeah, I mean, every player wants to play, you know. I mean, if he tells you any different, he's lying. I'll tell you that. Every player wants to play. It doesn't matter if they're friends. Doesn't matter if they're, you know, their kids play together. If they're in the same position, they want to play. Simple as that, you know. But it's just the competitiveness we have in this team is what makes us better. What made us have a good season last year, and hopefully will keep us in the top realm in the MLS. So, but yeah, I love to compete. I love to, you know, get out there and you know, grab my boots up and get out there and play and play my game. So I've been doing that for a while, and I hope to keep continue doing that.
He's DeMarcus Beasley joining us here, ahead of the Dynamo opener in March against Atlanta. Preseason continuing in Tucson, Arizona. We appreciate DeMarcus coming on the program here, getting a veteran's take on things that are going on. And, you know, we don't really know what's going on. You guys are kind of out of sight, out of mind out there training. We do know it's stages of a preseason, and differing players are doing differing things. Veterans are doing maybe different things sometimes. How good is the team at doing that? You know, I mean, you got guys that are competing to earn a contract. You got guys that are trying to be starters. You got guys that are veterans and we know are going to be here that are trying to do the things that prepare them for a long, grueling season. Within the context of all these team things you want to get right, there is a lot of individual things you want to get right as well.
Yeah, of course. And that's what I mean about the cohesiveness, you know, off the field. You know, I mean, we want to have a good group. You know, it's not just about having the best players. It's about having the best team. You know, I mean, you can have, you know, 11 great starters, but they all hate each other. They're not going to, you know, play well on the field. You know, we generally, you know, like each other. We have a good group of guys. You know, yeah, we compete. We want to play. We all want to be in the starting team. But at the end of the day, you know, we're all, you know, a good group of guys that, you know, want to succeed. And if you have that and have the mentality of we're all on the same page about winning a championship and doing it together, then, you know, that's half the battle. Because if you have 2, 3, 4 bad apples that, you know, kind of want to do the individual thing and just there for their own glory, it's not going to work, you know. I mean, that's in any situation. That's in any team sport. You know, that's not just in soccer and in the Houston Dynamo. That's in any team, football, basketball, any sport. If you have bad apples that want to just be individual and you know, not really care about the team and how and look at the big picture, it's going to be a problem. So if we have the whole team on board about, you know, winning a championship and bringing the cup back to Houston, then, you know, that's half the battle. And obviously the other part is doing it, is going out and showing it. It's not just about talking about it. It's about going out there and showing, you know, that we deserve to be, you know, in that spotlight. So we'll see. You know, like I said, it starts March 3rd. You know, we've had a good preseason so far. You know, the guys are responding well to, you know, everything the coaching staff has given us. And, you know, it's been a lot of hard work, obviously, as you can imagine. But, you know, it's just going to get us ready for 34 games.
Is it still fun? Is it still fun going through the preseason? Because when I got done, and obviously Major League Soccer wasn't around, I was in differing leagues. I missed, you know, the preseason, the preparation, as well as the games.
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously preseason, you know, you're away from your family and, you know, you got a lot of two-a-days and, you know, a lot of gym work and, you know, the trainings are longer and you probably got to do a lot more running, you know, than you do in the season. But, you know, that's all part of it. You know, it's all part of it, you know. But, you know, this is where you come together as a team, you know. That's where it starts. It starts in preseason, you know. In the off season, to be honest, you know. But as a team, it starts in preseason. Coming together, working hard together, you know, picking up the slack for everybody, making sure you keep everybody on, you hold every teammate, you know, to a high standard. You know, that's what we try to do here in Houston, is hold everybody to a high standard, you know, on and off the field, how you conduct yourself off the field, and obviously, you know, how you play football. So, but yeah, it all starts here. And, you know, like I said, we have a couple group things that we do together, you know, in preseason. So that's a big bonus. It's a plus. So, at the end of the day, you know, it's fun. You know, it's hard work, but it's fun because you're doing what you love. And, you know, for me as an old guy, interacting with the young kids, and, you know, it's fun. If it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it. Trust me.
He's DeMarcus Beasley, Houston Dynamo, 35 years of age from Fort Wayne, Indiana. His brother Jamar also was a professional soccer player as well. What does your brother Jamar do now?
He's back in Indiana. He's thinking about coaching back in our hometown of Fort Wayne. So he's just mulling over a couple of things. But, yeah, he's doing well. You know, he's enjoying his retirement. He retired like a year and a half ago now, mm-hmm. 2 years. Yeah, like 2 years ago now. So by a year, I think it'll be a year and a half. So, yeah, he's enjoying retirement, so he's happy. He's good.
All right, Wilmer Cabrera, DeMarcus, he referenced last year that the team kind of got found out down the way, and it was a lot of opponents were defending deeper against you to negate, you know, obviously the pace that the Dynamo have in behind teams with La Panterita and Kyoto, et cetera. Wilmer referenced this. How do you guys improve at breaking down deep defending teams here in the future? Because it seems like a tactic people are employing against you guys.
That's something that I don't want to share right now. But yeah, we have a couple of different things that we're going to try to implement this year. You know, we we're not going to be a surprise anymore. You know, we know that every team knows that. You know, so we're going to try to do a couple of things, you know, different. I'd rather not say right now because this is still, you know, the media. But at the same time, you know, we're going to try to, do some different things without losing, you know, our identity and our momentum from last season. You know, so we're just trying to build on what we had, and I think that's what you can kind of see from how the team was put together this year. You know, I mean, a lot of guys from last year are still here, so. You know, they believe in the guys that were here, and they believe that we have something, you know, good right now. We've got a lot of good young players. You know, all of our forwards, I think maybe 24 years old, you know, so
yep.
They're hungry. You know, they all want to score, they all want to play, and that's a good problem to have for Wilmer. So, yeah, we're going to do a couple things different, so, you know, we'll see how it goes on March 3rd.
One of the obvious things is Tomas Martinez, who's been brought in, the young Argentine. We all know he's a creative guy that can unlock defenses. Is it still a work in progress into sort of integrating him into the team? Because you, over your career, have played with a ton of very good playmakers. We could list them all.
He's a very good player. He has a very good left foot. You know, I think, you know, towards the end of last season, you kind of see what he could bring, you know, in a full season, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just about learning the league. And learning, you know, the players on the team, and, you know, because as you see, it was hard. Alex had a great season, you know. He had a good year, and he was playing well in that number 10 spot. And, you know, Tomas, you know, kind of, you know, took that from him. So, you know, it goes to show that the team, the coaching staff, and everyone is really high on him. You know, he's a good player. You know, Alex is a tough guy to lose because he was a, you know, good player for us. He mm-hmm. he worked hard, scored goals. You know, he did everything for the team. It doesn't matter what position he played. So Tomas, you know, can do the same thing, but adding a bit more creativity and, you know, a bit more bite. So, you know, it's just about him getting comfortable with everything with us, you know, the league and, you know, him feeling comfortable, you know, in Houston. And I think we'll see that, you know, definitely this year.
Now, what about on the other side of this thing? You're definitely mentioning his comfort level and understanding the league and all, but don't you guys as a group and a team have to put him in a place where he can succeed? And does that mean you got to kind of learn his tendencies and how it is he likes to get the ball and where he likes to get the ball and how he moves? I mean, that's not something that's easy to figure out.
That's what I said before. that's what preseason is for. You know, that's mm-hmm. what it's all about. Especially, you know, some of the new guys we have. You know, it's all about learning. You know, each guy's likes on the field. Does he like it in space? Does he like it to his feet? You know, does he like to have pressure on him when he gets the ball? Does he like more just if he's by himself? You know, little things like that. You know, you learn from different players. You learn, you know, from your teammates. So, it's a work in progress. You know, I think he's going to be a great addition. You know, especially this, he's going to be like a new player for us this year. You know, Tomas, and you know, we're all excited because you know we all think he's a great addition. You know, from last season, and now he's going to be in his first full season. And you know, it's just all about you know learning him and him learning you know us and you know putting it all together on the field and making great things.
DeMarcus, Chicago Fire, way back. 1999. Then you go to PSV, Manchester City, Rangers, Hanover, Puebla, back to the Dynamo. How has the league changed, in your opinion, from the days when you were early in the league as a younger player with the Chicago Fire and now? And I'm talking on the field, the level of play, the level of competition, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed. You know, obviously all this stuff from, you know, stadiums and you know facilities and you know media coverage and that part, you know, that's pretty obvious to see. But I mean, people always talk about, you know, the quality is so much better and you know teams are, you know, like heads and shoulders over, you know, teams back then. And I'm like, a lot of these people, they never played in those times. And second, you know, they weren't really around. I mean, you look at these teams, the D.C. teams in 96, 97, 98, well, Chicago won that year, but, you know, that first D.C. team, you know, was unbelievable. You know, the L.A. Galaxy teams, our Chicago Fire team in 2000, you know, you look at those teams and you tell me that they couldn't compete now. it's funny that I hear people say, oh, man, it's so leaps and bounds over, you know, when the league first started. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Player for player, maybe there's, you know, obviously a lot of younger talent, you know, into the league that makes it seem like it's better. But, you know, I'm old school, so, you know, I'm always going to have a debate about that because I was there. I played in those games. I played against those players. And, you know, for people to say that, you know, it's, you know, heads and shoulders, you know, better now, it's not like that because I think that those teams 1,000,000% can – you know, easily compete in the league now.
That'll do it here for tonight on The Way Out. A moment for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com. All you got to do is call 713-322-HURT, 713-322-4878. Now, they're bilingual. You don't want to get in an accident, but if you do, they've got you covered. It might be a car accident, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction plant, or refinery. You might even drive an 18-wheeler. The Daspit Law Firm is going to treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com. Call 713-322-HURT or DaspitLaw.com for advice on the website. That'll do it for tonight. For Jose Partida, Victor Ariza, all our guests, including Dr. Joe Macnick, also DeMarcus Beasley, and Warren Barton, we thank you for tuning into the show tonight. Remember, next Wednesday night, we're live over at the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive in West University.
ESPN 97.5.